In the spring of 1950, Sam Walton and his father-in-law drove across the greening hills of northwest Arkansas into the little town of Bentonville. Sam later wrote that Bentonville appealed to him because it was close to his wife Helen's hometown in Oklahoma, and it was a good place to hunt birds. At the time, the area was home to many apple orchards and chicken farms, and bobwhite quail thrived in the brush that grew between the farm fields and woods. Walton had recently sold his first store, a Ben Franklin franchise in Newport, Arkansas, and he now used the $50,000 he had cleared to buy Luther Harrison's variety store on Bentonville's town square. Walton's father-in-law, Leland Stanford Robson, loaned him another $20,000 to buy the barbershop next door. After knocking down that wall, Walton opened a 4,000-square-foot five-and-dime variety store. "At the age of 32, I was a full-fledged merchant," Walton wrote in his autobiography. "I love competition, and Bentonville just struck me as the right place to prove I could do it all over again." And Walton would indeed have to compete. Although Bentonville's population was only 2,900, the town already had three other variety stores. America in 1950 was a land of independent farms, independent stores, independent businesses, and independent communities ruled to a very large degree by the people who lived in them. It was a world in which almost any citizen who wanted to get ahead had a real opportunity to do so, or at least any white male citizen with access to the generous government programs and bank credit of the time. One way Sam Walton got ahead was through simple hard work. This included extensive travel to the small clothing factories of Western Tennessee and the garment district of Manhattan to save a few pennies by buying straight from the manufacturer. He also closely studied how powerful suppliers of branded goods, like Procter & Gamble, manipulated the little guy in order to figure out ways to escape from their sway. The Walmart Museum in Bentonville today describes Walton's Five and Dime as a huge success. Yet at 80 feet by 50 feet, Walton's original store was anything but huge. Nor was the chain of 24 stores Walton built over the coming two decades in any way huge. By 1967, yearly sales per store still barely topped $500,000. Most people listening to these words were probably taught that the independent stores and independent farms of mid-century America were nothing more than artifacts of an earlier time, inefficient businesses in an inefficient backwater of the world waiting to be modernized and rationalized. Yet such a story could not be more wrong. As we will discuss over the course of this audiobook, the political economy of Bentonville in 1950 was very much by design. Not only the outlines of the fields and the size of the stores, but even how its citizens thought and acted were to some degree the result of two centuries of hard political struggle by the American people, expressed in thousands of laws and policies designed to protect the liberty of the citizen and democratic institutions. The America of the 1950s was very much also a land of the organization man in the gray flannel suit and of giant unions at corporations like General Motors and U.S. Steel, and it was very much a land of intricate nation-spanning networks, of communications and transportation, of finance and industry, networks more advanced than anywhere else in the world. These systems, taken as a whole, had helped to empower Americans to fight and win a two-front war against Germany and Japan. But the fact that, 5 years after the end of the war, America was still home to millions of prosperous family-owned farms and stores, and family-owned trucking companies, and family-owned insurance agencies, and family-owned bakeries, and family-owned ice houses and slaughterhouses, was the result of millions of American families rising up, time and again, to keep the financier and corporate lord out of their business. So, too, was the fact that millions of American working people could count on strong unions to protect them in their work. As we will discuss, it was a design that consciously elevated the protection of individual liberty and democracy above certain forms of efficiency. As we will also discuss, it was a design that, in many respects, proved to be far more efficient than many of the systems imposed by the monopolists.